side on a rainy, rainy night, holding your baby tight. Well, I have you ever had your dreams, long forgotten schemes coming true? It seems that I have. Okie Freshwater, and you are now listening to The Morning Detour with Wizzy and K on the mighty CKUT 90.3 FM. Let's get it.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Please don't be convinced by what people say. I'm not brilliant. I'm not a genius. I'm not even gifted, really. I mean, I have gifts, but these are things that all come from God and through me. Everything that is out there, everything that I'm privy to, you know, so are you. If you get that into your system and get that into your spirit and understand that, you know, we're not separated by anything, not time, nor space, not talent, nor gift, just acknowledgement and understanding where our gifts come from.
How could you forget?
I've seen faces, I've been places. If I could fly into different spaces, this way I might forget about your existence. Thought you would play a role in my world, either as best friend or my lover. Yet I am standing here in the lost, in the midst of time.
Make a statement. You ain't never had to ask for that. It's included in the package, and I was made like that. I came like that. I paid for that. You ain't ever have to pay me back. Can't make me feel bad for nothing. Don't make me feel bad for loving. At my big old age, I can't be faced. But what you must take is going insane. like I'm just moving on while fucking on while running my mouth. Like I'm throwing it back, giving it up when I'm in town. I hear every word they talk, try not to get at all. I know it's running to know me from nothing. Still got me to shake it off. I know I can take it all. I know they're frontin', you know they're frontin', babe. So if you hear that rah, rah, rah about me, talking all out the side of their mouth about me, I beg you, don't listen. I beg you, just hear me, believe me. Trust you can see through it all, believe through it all, breathe through it all. Our backs against the wall, we rise and we fall. I'm just moving on while fucking on while running my mouth. Like I'm throwing it back, giving it up when I'm in town. Hear every word they talk, try not to care at all. I know it's running, don't know me from nothing. Still burning to shake it off. I know I can take it all. I know it's running.
On CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yeah, Munchie, y'all. This is The Morning Detour. I'm your host, Wheezy Moonchaser, alongside Larina PR. And this is the premier morning show in Montreal on the mighty CKUT 90.3 FM. Ah, I'm feeling good, boy. Lolo, the Canadians beat the Leaf. We're going to the second round. This is the ideal place for news, reviews, and interviews. We're going to kick off the weekend. We own Fridays. It's The Morning Detour. So, Larina, how was your week?
My week has been good. It's been busy. I'm taking a course. I have a lot of stuff going on, but it's been good. How's your week?
Well, listen, man, we're gonna do a little name dropping here this morning. So on Sunday, one of my business partners, Fareed, hit me up. He's like, "Yo, I got an interview with a guy. He's playing in the African League. He's a professional basketball player." So he linked me up with Mick Kabongo. He's a Canadian professional basketball player. So he's out there playing in the Basketball Africa League for the NBA. Beautiful experience. So me and Mike Roach from OXP Media in Toronto, we did that interview together on IG Live. And it was dope to see, like, you know, because, you know, we watch things on TV. And for me to do the interviews live and I'm seeing NBA players and guys playing African League, so it's really dope. But Mick spoke about the conversation he had with J. Cole. He's like, "Yeah, I got a chance to talk to J. Cole for 10 minutes. And he's like, "Yo, J. Cole's taking this basketball thing seriously." He said J. Cole told him he's going to be entering other leagues. J. Cole is going to take this basketball thing. Now, he didn't do super great in the African League. I think he scored about 5 points, 5 rebounds, and about like 3 assists. But you got to start somewhere. But it's a beautiful thing. And I spoke to Mick about what it's like when you go back to Africa and you feel that essence. And he spoke about it. He said it was a beautiful thing. Like, as soon as the plane drops down and you recognize that, hey, I'm back in the motherland, he goes, "It's such a humbling experience." So I felt great. I was able to do that. And then thanks to you on my popular podcast, Running With Wolves, I got a chance to interview Janella Massa. So I did Wolfpack questions with her people, which is I asked her 10 to 12 questions ranging from everything from her personal life to her professional life, to her ambitions, to her dreams. Yo, what a great personality. If you guys don't know Janella Massa, she's the host of Canada Tonight with Janella Massa on CBC. Monday to Friday, weeknights, 8 p.m. You're listening, nationally award-winning broadcaster. So it was a beautiful interview right there. This morning, people, we have two amazing interviews. So you guys know once a month, we talk about financial literacy with our financial advisor, Louis Pierre. So this week, we're going to do part one of our mortgage segment. So that's the Smart Money series. If you want to catch up on the Smart Money series, it's up there on the Detour 514 YouTube. So make sure you guys tune into that. And also, fascinating interview. Listen, if people in Montreal or Canada don't know about this guy, he's a future mogul. He's a mogul right now. I spoke with Antwi Atuaheni. He's a Ghanaian-Canadian entrepreneur. He's a former professional basketball player. He's a brand manager, and he's also a general manager of two respected sports organizations, which is the Niagara River Lions and the Mississauga Tiger Baseball Club. So, very beautiful interview. My listen, Larina, he went to Arizona State with James Harden. He's done things for Ebony Magazine. He's definitely a mover and shaker. Very insightful interview right there. Now, I don't know if people knew, this is a very monumentous week as well. Let's talk about, are you informed about Black Wall Street a little bit, Lorena? You know what Black Wall Street is?
Yeah, I know about Tulsa.
Boy, it's funny. They never taught us this in school, Lolo. But no. So let me open up here. So Biden says the Tulsa race massacre can't be buried no matter how hard people try. So President Biden traveled to Oklahoma on Tuesday to mark the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa race massacre amid a renewed reckoning over a long overlooked attack that left as many as 300 people dead in a community once known as Black Wall Street. So basically on May 31st, June 1st, 1921, a armed white mob attacked the all-black district of Greenwood. The racist mob destroyed the area, leaving 40 square blocks in ruins and nearly 10,000 people homeless. A century later, it remains one of the worst episodes of racial violence in U.S. history. And you know, still, they don't teach us this in school, huh? You have to go get this information on yourself. You know where I learned about this, Lorena, is when I watched the Hidden Colors DVD. I was like, we had a Black Wall Street? Let me quote President Biden. He goes, "For much too long, the history of what took place here was told in silence, cloaked in darkness, Lorena." President Biden has become a poet, huh? Who's writing for President Biden now? You see the difference? Trump was just giving you reactionary kind of speech. Biden is so poetic.
Yeah, but it's a bit much with Biden. But it is good that they are putting this information out there, because there's a lot of places where Black land and Black businesses and everything got destroyed. So we have Tulsa, we have the Seneca Village in Manhattan, New York, which is now what's the big park there that they have?
Central Park.
There's Lake Lanier in Atlanta that I just found out that was a whole village, and it's like an underground village. They just built a lake over it after they like ran all the Black people out of there and killed them. So there is so much information for us to learn.
Yeah, so obviously for decades after the massacre, the violence was covered up and not well known nationally. But as the national conversation has increasingly focused on the issue of systemic racism and police violence over the past several years, the attack has received more attention both in the mainstream news media and popular culture. So for those that don't know, as one of the most prominent concentrations of African-American business in the United States during the early 20th century, it was probably known as America's Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street had real estate agents, entrepreneurs, doctors who offer their services in the neighborhood. Like, we're talking about 1921. Like, like segregation was still involved, and we had this whole community of Black professionals.
As usual.
And they burnt it down. And then they covered up the history. Crazy, crazy. So, listen, man. I don't even know how to feel. Like, are we supposed to mark it? Like, it's an anniversary for something that was devastating towards our Black community. So, it's weird, right? Like, it's not really a cause for celebration.
No, it's not a cause for celebration. It's really, it kind of makes you feel defeated.
Yeah.
That's what I get, like a sense of defeat. Like, we've done so much, but every time we get somewhere, we get knocked down. Like, they don't ever want to see us doing well.
Listen, man. We've been doing it since 1921 and before. And other news here, I want to know, Lorena, are you mad? Our mayor's been receiving a lot of backlash here. You know, obviously the curfews was lifted last Friday. Everybody went crazy in the old port. It was like Pasa Pasa meets Soul Train Award. There was no mask. People were dancing in a circle. Everybody was dutty whining. I don't know what was going on. You were just telling me that the Orange Julep was like Fast and the Furious 12.
At the Orange Julep. I wasn't there. I saw the videos. It was lit.
But Valley Pond is under attack because Montreal mayor apologized after being spotted on the terrace last Friday night, appearing to break the health rules. So Valley Pond and two colleagues took advantage of the curfew being lifted by hitting up the Pontiac restaurant in the city's Plateau Mont Royal borough. So Frederick Carl posted a picture of the mayor with four other people, seemingly in violation with public health guidelines, which limit the number of adults from different residences to two. So our mayor broke the rules. She's human. You know what I mean? Some people are killing her for it. Some people's like, hey, listen, man, we can't be perfect all the time. Where do you kind of land on it, Lorena? Because they put these guidelines in place. There are elected officials. Ideally, they're supposed to set the example.
No, they are supposed to set the example. They are technically the role model. But like you said, she is human. Mm-hmm. A lot of people got caught up in the hype on Friday of being out with your friends and things like that. A lot of people overdrank because they were so excited. So I give her a pass for it. You know, she's human. She was probably excited to be out amongst people and everything. So I give her a pass. So
Yeah, Lolo's like, okay, no, we gonna kill her for that. She seems excited. She has such a beautiful smile, Valerie Pond, our mayor. Listen, she gotta come on the show. She gotta look at your face.
That's how you
I know Legault's your guy. I know Legault's your bestie.
Legault is not my guy, but this is how you're gonna reel her in.
I'm a compliment. No, I'm being serious. I think she has a nice smile. Well, she's smiling a lot, but she's an elected official. I guess she has to give off this semblance of happiness, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, Montreal, my say, it's the morning detour. It's the mighty CKT 90.3 FM. Let's play some music when I come back. You know, let's do some local and international news.
The morning detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Love is such a twerk. Love is such a twerk. Drop it low and bring it back and then she put it in a reverse. Bump on the one branch, you can't get up, pull up your skirt. Call your hands and you have the wire away. Shut on the upper, you kiss and listen when you bless and you're not curse. Catch on your hand, you know the mystery and the hands. Turn round for me, then me get a naked act. Call your hands and you have the wire away. Shut on the upper, you kiss and listen when body scaling out the building, come with me. You make a rabbit like an engine. I was stacking up the cheese on you, was stacking up the cheese. I'm paper taste like it's a race out, not the arena, I'm winning. Dropping me keep on for me, sitting yellow bird. And you get the medallion, she get the award. Hey, touch it for me, just like yesterday. Yeah, see the wind up like a take a rig. Fuck real, go start before she comes. Love a say she twerk, drop it low and bring it back. And then she put it in a reverse. Bump on them with brass, she can't keep up, pull off his skirt. On your wings and you want the one your way. Shut on the air for your kiss and bless your body, bless my yellow curse. Fire everything she want, me got the night, I guess. Come round for me, then me get a little bit.
I beg you give me some room. Me see a place vacant in your heart. Oh well, man, I'll fill it up soon. Take your wife from all the pagans in the dark. Sweep you off the feet like broom. You are the key, baby girl, make it start. Me girl, you're hotter than June. Make every day me see you in my thoughts. And I cannot help myself. Baby, I'm a mega move. You big, got me stuck on you. Reservation for us two. Baby, I'm a make a move. You bitch, I'm stuck on you. Reservation for us two. I know she run bird, but she solid. The bug are negative, them shot it in volley. Me and you together, we the best I never call it. She full of etiquette, me girl, full of knowledge. You get the bag, baby girl, you want no baggage. Top notch, them not stop watch, you're not average. Let's shop, shop, make we take a stop down to Paris. Chop, chop, beg you give me your hand in a marriage. I just cannot help myself. Baby, I'm a mega move. You feel got me stuck on you. Give me some room. Me see a place vacant in your heart. Oh well, man, I'll fill it up soon. Take your wife from all the pagans in the dark. Sweep you off your feet like broom. You are the key, baby girl, make it start. Me girl, you're hotter than June. Make every day me see you in my thoughts. And I cannot help myself.
Yes, Montreal, my city. Welcome back to the Morning Detour. I'm your host, Weezy Moon Chaser, alongside Lorena PR. Now it's about the time to do some local and international news. One of my favorite shows growing up, Lorena, was The Pretender. I love the fact that Jad was able to go in there, do anybody's job, and help people out. It was like he was like the ultimate guardian angel. And I always had in my head, like, I would love to be The Pretender. I'd love to just go in and have the aptitude, the mental capacity to just do any job. Actually, somebody beat me to it, Lorena. Alleged fake doctor caught ordering blood work x-rays at Lakeshore ER. So a woman was spotted by Montreal police on Tuesday after staff grew suspicious. Police got the call around 2 p.m. on Tuesday. When they arrived at the hospital located in Pointe Claire, officers found the woman in crisis and confused, a spokesperson for the police service said. CBC News had learned that the woman was in the emergency department for at least 6 hours, acting as if she was a doctor. 6 hours. This went unnoticed.
Wow.
This is crazy. She wore a lab coat, a name tag, and a lanyard. I guess she went to Bourron Grump and put the whole package together, right?
I mean, it's not really hard to get, like, the outfits for the hospital.
Right? So the woman also interacted with patients, taking their names off their medical braces and ordering blood work. Like, how does she know to do this? Does she have a background being a nurse? Like, what's going on? She even wrote requisitions that patients be sent in for x-ray. Police were called once staff in the radiology department grew suspicious. Police say that the woman did not resist when taken into custody and she was sent for psychological evaluation. How do you like them apples, Lorena?
Yeah, well, I think there's probably something wrong with her, or she just feels that the hospital wasn't moving fast enough, so she had to...
She had to step in. Throw on the lab coat, the lanyard. She ordered x-rays, but at least she was being productive. It's not like she was, well, it is detrimental what she's doing there.
Yeah,
but
like, it could have, if nobody suspected her, like, what if she tried to do more things instead of just ordering something, you know?
Yeah.
That's scary.
You gotta make sure. Now when you go to the hospital, you gotta double check and ask them, are you really a nurse? Are you really a doctor? Can you show me your ID code? Because all doctors and nurses have an ID code that's registered with the register of doctorship or whatever the case is called, Lorena. But let's talk about COVID-19. So Montreal, Laval still have lower COVID-19 vaccination rates than the rest of Quebec. So Montréal-Nord has the lowest rate among city boroughs at 43.8%. Two of the Quebec cities most affected by COVID-19, Montreal and its northern suburb, Laval, have among the lowest vaccination rates in the province, according to the data from Quebec's Public Health Institute. For some reason, Montreal and Laval, I thought everybody was getting vaccinated, but apparently we have the lowest rates in Quebec. Experts say that those lower rates aren't surprising. Vaccine hesitancy, low trust in government, and negative experiences with the health system are all the factors that help explain why people in some communities haven't been as eager as others to get a shot. Now, Lorena, you know, we're not doctors. We don't work for Quebec's Public Health Institute. But what would you assume is the reason why most Montrealers and Laval residents are a little bit hesitant to get this vaccine?
Well, from the things that I've been seeing, I think in Montréal-Nord there was like a problem of some communities not being able to have access to the vaccine. So there's that issue that maybe they should work on if people are wanting to get it, to have it more accessible to them. And then also things like you said, like a lot of people are questioning the government. A lot of people are questioning the actual vaccine. A lot of things aren't clear. Things are changing, it seems, every month because we're discovering new things. But maybe as time goes on and things become more consistent, more people will be more, more willing maybe to take it or maybe not. Like,
you know. No, I totally agree. I definitely think taking the vaccine is a personal choice, and we're going to start to see in the next upcoming weeks that there's going to be a divide that's going to be created here, where those that are vaccinated are opposed to those that aren't vaccinated in terms of services and things that you can enjoy as basic human liberties. Next week, we're going to do a special segment examining the vaccine in its totality, not so much the efficacy about it, but just the whole infrastructure of the vaccine, the implementation into our society, the vaccine passports, the toll that scientists have been undertaking with this whole pandemic. We're gonna do a special segment next week on the Morning Detour. But
the whole divide, that's another thing from the government. Like, why are you dividing us? Why always some sort of segregation?
You know, we're already black already, and now you're trying to segregate us for this vaccine thing. Like, you're trying to I don't like the feeling that my hand is being forced.
Yeah.
And I don't like the fact that a personal choice that each individual has is being propped up, and now you have to define, like, I see people take pictures. That's your personal choice. Do what you want to do on social media. But I see people putting up pictures, getting the pins that are vaccinated. You have companies that are offering free burgers if you're vaccinated. And we're going to talk about this next week as well. You have prisons in the States that are knocking off years off your sentences if you get vaccinated. It has me a little curious. I'm like, what's in this vaccine that you guys are so hype to put into people. And I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist. It does come off a little suspicious, because the energy behind this is very, very strong. So as of Monday, May 31st, Quebec reported its lowest number of new COVID-19 cases since September 2020. The news comes as the province pushes ahead with its gradual reopening plan. So a lot of people thought over the weekend, everything's opening up, the numbers were going to spike crazy. But actually, we're looking kind of lower though, Lorena. Quebec reported 288 new cases of COVID-19 on Wednesday and 5 new deaths. Since the start of the pandemic, there has been 370,815 confirmed cases. 11,138 people have died. There are 340 people in hospital, a decrease of 14, including 77 in intensive care, a decrease of 9. 70,847 more vaccine doses have been administered, for a total of 5,719,839 since December 14. So we're still not at 75%? We're too much Canadians. Let's talk about school. With all the COVID days and all the pet days that all the kids have gone, Louie, I thought school in Canada was gonna be like the NBA. A quick turnaround, a little 2-week break, and we'll go right back to the next semester. But back to normal for Quebec elementary and high school students in the fall, if vaccination goes as planned. There's a heavy emphasis on this vaccination, Lorena. So 45% of 12 to 17-year-olds received first dose or took appointment, the minister says. Elementary and high school students will be able to return to classrooms without masks or bubbles if 75% of 12 to 17-year-olds are vaccinated and if cases remain stable, says Education Minister Jean-François Roberge. Roberge made the announcement alongside Isabelle Charest, the junior education minister. I didn't even know there was a junior education minister. How much education ministers do we need? But okay, I digress. And with Quebec Public Health Director Dr. Horatio, our good friend Dr. Horatio Haruda, at a news conference Wednesday morning. Students will have to wash their hands regularly, but physical distancing measures will no longer be required. Still, schools will have to be ready to pivot back to online learning in case of any COVID-19 outbreak, Roberge said. How do you feel about that, Lamina? No more bubbles, no more social distancing. You just gotta wash your hands a lot. I'm a little apprehensive. Do elementary kids typically wash their hands a lot in just in general?
I think if it's something that's instilled in them in the school, then I think the majority of them will follow the rules. Mm-hmm. But I mean, at this point, I just feel so bad for the kids. So,
man, like sometimes I think to myself, like imagine being in your like grade 10 or grade or even in your senior year of high school and to go through this pandemic, like everything's kind of like the whole experience of prom, the whole experience of being a senior in school, but just the learning is so scattered.
Yeah, no, but even like, okay, I go to school this day, but then this day I don't go to school. Then next week it's different.
Like I'd be mixed up all the days, Lorena. I'm like, oh, I thought today was an online day. I'm supposed to go in?
Yeah, no, it's really confusing because I felt like almost every week it was changing for kids to go to school, not go to school. And then now with the teachers being on strike as well, there's so many days off now. So I don't know. I feel really bad. There's no consistent plan for them.
So Ottawa ups the fine up to $5,000 for travelers who refuse to quarantine in a hotel. A advisory panel said last week, hotel quarantine system is flawed. Air passengers entering Canada who refuse to quarantine in a designated hotel will soon be subject to $5,000 fine. That's a lot of money. The federal government has announced that starting Friday, today, international air passengers who decline to take their required COVID-19 test or who refuse to check into a quarantine hotel could be hit with a $5,000 fine for each offense, a $2,000 increase from the current fine. Boy, they're upping it, boy. The government's like, nah, you know what? 3 wasn't enough. Let's get it to 5. So for those that don't know, on February 22nd, the government said air passengers entering Canada must take a COVID-19 test upon arrival and spend up to 3 days of their 14-day quarantine at a government-approved hotel to wait for their test results. Passengers must foot the bill for their stay, which can cost up to $2,000. So eventually, it still comes out more or less to the same thing, right? Imagine staying in a hotel for 14 days. It's crazy. The fine increases follows a government advisory panel report issued last week, which said Ottawa should scrap the hotel quarantine requirement and instead let people arrange their own quarantine. It goes back to trust. Can we trust the travelers when they enter back into Canada that they're going to properly quarantine themselves on their own? It's a trust thing. And I think that's a hard thing for the government to gauge based on past behavior. Can people be trusted? to travel and come back home and to self-quarantine and to follow the guidelines and the measures. Some people don't even want to give their number for the follow-up call for the test and so forth. Can the population be trusted? This is really what the debate is about.
It's really tricky, but I think it's messed up that they have to spend extra money to stay in a hotel. You know, I don't know. It's a really tricky thing.
Well, don't leave it to the government, Lorena. They'll put us in some FEMA tents. I said, okay, you want the government to foot the bill? They'll put you in some little cabin lodge or something like that. It wouldn't have been a nice hotel. Let's talk about our mayor a little bit. She was trolling Denny Cordero the other day. So Mayor Plante just trolled Denny Cordero about drinking in parks after 8 p.m. If elected, Cordero wants to ban all alcohol consumption in Montreal parks after 8 p.m. Does he not want to win? He knows Quebecers love to drink. Saint-Jean-Baptiste is right around the corner. He knows Quebecers love their barbecues in the park. We love to drink in the park after 8 p.m. But for some reason, he wants to put this in. He wants to make this a mandate. So if elected as mayor of Montreal in the upcoming election, Denis Cordes said he would ban all alcohol consumption in Montreal parks at 8 p.m. And it's safe to say Mayor Plante isn't on board with such an idea. So she trolled him. She did a picture and she was drinking. Like, just, but I like her pants that she had on. Oh, man.
Wait, the smile and the pants.
Oh, you know, listen, I'm just trying to butter the toast in the morning, Lorena. I'm just trying to butter the toast. So Cordero's team told MTL Blog that his limiting alcohol consumption proposal is meant to provide police in Montreal with the tools to help citizens regain a sense of calm. What do you mean, Mr. Cordero, sense of calm? I know they're going crazy at the Orange Julep. I know people are going crazy in the Old Port over the weekend. But regain a sense of calm. I don't know. I'm finding it hard to find a correlation, causation between drinking after 8 p.m. in parks and people remaining calm. Is he getting your vote as next mayor of Montreal?
No, because there's bigger issues to handle besides my drinking after 8 p.m. Like, leave me alone.
Yo, Dave, listen, yeah, give it to politicians. They're so great at changing the narrative. Speaking about narrative, good news. Gyms can reopen in Montreal and Laval next week. And here are the rules. So get your mask and running shoes ready. We know so many of us are thrilled to find out that gyms in Montreal and Laval can reopen yet again as of June 7th, thanks to these two regions moving into the orange zone on that same date. Like any other indoor public spaces in Quebec, wearing a mask or face covering is required while inside the gyms. Further regulations include maintaining a 2-meter distance from others, hand washing upon entering, and ensuring that gym machines are sanitized after use. So in an email to members, EconoFitness specified, in order to comply with government requirements, note that changing rooms and showers are not available. However, access to the toilets and sinks is permitted. Thus, you can expect the situation to be similar in other gyms as well. Good news, man. Shout out to Biner Training and Good Fit Training. Those are the two gyms that I frequent. Good news, man. The trainers get start, you know, regaining their money. Things are moving. Hopefully, the numbers won't spike back up and we go back to a lockdown of the gyms. Listen, gym owners, get the little spray thing that sprays down the machines. Have the little glass thing. Follow the rules, man. People just want to get fit, man. People, you know, physical fitness, man, it does so much good for your mental. Louis, are you excited for the roadwork to come? You know it's summertime. You know we are the capital of construction. We are the capital of roadwork. I got the updates, Lolo. So roadwork season is here, and you might want to consider taking public transit again. But don't they tell us this every year? I feel like every day we might want to consider taking public transit, right?
They do it all the time, and then they raise the prices for public transportation.
No, but hold on now. Montreal vows to limit construction on 50 important arteries to give drivers a break. Oh, you're giving us a break now. Okay, good stuff. So in the last 50 months, people have had few reasons to leave their homes, making it easier for drivers to go from point A to point B. But things will likely get hectic on the roads this summer. So the promise is Transport Ministry and the city are planning to close to 50 work sites on highways, boulevards, and streets, and they're imploring commuters to use public transit again. I'm not going to be one of these people that's going to use public transit. Ridership has dropped significantly during the pandemic, but obviously it's going to uptake as curfew is done. It's summertime. People want to get out and have a good time. So the upcoming work sites include highways 40 and 13, the Bonaventure Expressway, the Ville-Marie Tunnel, the new Turcotte Interchange, and the $1.1 billion project to upgrade the Louis-Hippolyte-Lafontaine Tunnel Bridge, which is expected to last until 2025. So let's be honest. You know, that's going to be ready by 2036, right? Now, like, let's not even play around with this, right? Oh, Lolo, the madness, the madness. Did you see what's going on with craft beer? So the craft beer industry faces reckoning as claims of sexism, misogyny, and assault surfaces online. So women in the U.S. and Canada are sharing toxic experiences in the industry that normally enjoys a feel-good rep. This is craft. My salad dressing, my condiments. This misogyny and sexism at craft? So in the past few weeks, hundreds of stories have been collected on an Instagram account owned by Massachusetts brewery worker Brienne Allen, ranging from tales of daily microaggressions to disturbing claims of physical and sexual assault. While many of the stories are anonymous and have not been verified, I'm going to say that once again, while many of the stories are anonymous and have not been verified, they're already led to high-profile resignations, including the founders of Modern Times and Tired Hands, two highly regarded U.S. breweries. Where there's smoke, there is fire. What is going on with the brewery industry?
That's why you have to be very careful, and you have to make sure that if something is happening, you fix it immediately, because now people are sharing their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Last year on Twitter, there were so many jobs in Canada and the U.S. that were being exposed for the racism, the sexual harassment, and everything like that. It's sad to see that so many workplaces are having like toxic environments.
It's a crazy thing, man. It's a crazy thing. What's even more crazy, I don't know if people in the city saw this, really sad news. So remains of 250 children are found at BC Residential School. So a mass grave was found at a residential school in British Columbia that contained the remains of 215 Indigenous children. I apologize, I can't say the name probably of the First Nation tribe, but the First Nation is working with museum specialists and the coroner's office to establish the cause and timing of deaths and the timing of the deaths, which are currently not known. The deaths are these children, and the mass graves were documented by the school's administrators. Some of the children found are as young as 3 years old. What's worth noting is that the children in this residential school were under the care of the school staff, the churches, and the federal government, who are all responsible for killing and abusing the children. Let me say that once again. The children in residential schools were under the care of school staff, the churches, the federal government, who are all responsible for killing and abusing the children. The landmark Truth and Reconciliation report released in 2015 called Residential Schools a systematic government-sponsored attempt to destroy Aboriginal culture and language and to assimilate Aboriginal people so that they no longer existed as distinct peoples. Now we're finding bodies under school. You saw the treatment that fellow Canadian resident Joyce suffered at the hands of the hospital institution. The level of disrespect and lack of empathy towards the Aboriginals is crazy in Canada. But then Canadians swear that we're not like America. You know, a lot of Canadians swear, oh no, that's only in the U.S. The level of discrimination that's put forward towards the Aboriginal in this country is disgraceful.
So basically, it's been going on forever. It's something, again, that we're not really taught. We don't really dive deep into it. When we have that history class in high school, they kind of like brush past it. It's not like a big chunk of our learning. So for me, I had to learn about it in university when I took one of the courses that really focused in on Indigenous communities and the residential schools and their culture and the loss of culture. And hearing people's experiences that went to these residential schools were heartbreaking.
Yeah.
There's some people too that came online on social media to talk about their experiences as well. And it's crazy that this was something that was okay for so many years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And lasting effects that it has. So, I mean, we've been asking for them to admit the systemic racism. We've been asking for them to change certain things, to fund certain things. And it's just, I don't know. It's just not happening. Like, the level of disrespect is insane.
Let me just update our listeners in Montreal about residential schools in Canada. So residential schools were initially run by Catholic and Protestant churches. But by the 1880s, the federal government fully embraced and funded the residential school system as part of the Indian Act. So from 1863 to 1996, over 150,000 children were forcibly removed from their families and placed in these boarding schools That is seven generations of indigenous people over the course of 150 years. Many children never returned home, and those who did suffered from unimaginable trauma. The explicit intent was to separate these children from their families and cultures in an effort to, quote, kill the Indian in the child. This is Canada. This is the history they don't teach us. 250 children are found in BC residential school. Man. Montreal, my city, that was our local and international news. We got to play some music, man. It's the mighty CKT 90.3 FM. That's the Morning Detour.
Tell me what you really, really need, little guy. Take you out and put you in double C, little bang. Hey, you had it turning in them cheeks, little babe. Got you down and out and on your knees, little babe. I like to when I'm in the cut. If I take you to my crib, I put that way down in your gut. Dunny's tired of talking, all you said is so what? Dunny's tired of talking, got them zannies going up. Shawty at the strip to the lease, turning in them cheeks, little thing. Got you down and out and on your knees, little thing. I like to when I'm in the cut. If I take you to my crib, I put that way down in your cut. Some millions. I done caught you late night in that club. Count your Benjamins. I know you steady touching on your body when you reminisce. Whatever you want, count them dividends. Yo, tell me what you really, really need, little guy. Take you out and put you in double C, little babe. Hey, you out of turning in them cheeks, little babe. Got you down and out and on your knees, little babe. Take you to my crib, I put that way down in your gut. Danny's tired of talking, all you said is so what? Danny's tired of talking, got them zannies going up.
Stop playing with a boss like that. I don't react well when you talk like that. Put the money on the phone, then call right back. I don't really want to do the small talk like that. Yeah. Stop playing with a boss like that. I don't react well when you talk like that. Put the money on the phone, then call right back. I don't really want to do the small talk like that. Yeah. Run it up, yeah, that's a motive, but mostly I'm focused on being the coldest, but being the hottest, they say I'm not modest, I say I agree, I don't got it, I got it, I'm not sparing feelings, throwing me quiet, I made millions, I'm about to go ride, see, that's how I really feel, I think you would too, this reminds me of really feel, different team, same game, but it's f*** you, as long as you on the other side, I don't trust you, you don't love me, bitch, I don't love you, you don't gotta lie, I won't sit around and judge you, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that's just not enough M's, I got to pay for my whole family's rent and dinner. Stop playing with a boss like that. I don't react well when you talk like that. Put the money on the phone, then call right back. I don't really want to do the small talk like that. Yeah. Stop playing with a boss like that. I don't react well when you talk like that. Put the money on the phone, yeah, then call right back. Yeah. I don't really want to do, yeah, the small talk like that. Yeah. Please shut up if you don't have a deal ready. I don't really want to waste my time. My lawyer told y'all I better have 10 mil ready. But it's cool, I ain't tripping, I'm eating. Every day of my life is the weekend. Got my own weed that I'm chiefing. They be hating on me for no reason. Now I'm lying, guess I gave him a couple along with a blueprint. I gave him the hustle, boo-hoo-hoo. Y'all should get over it. Promise you I'ma be over it. I ain't about to stop for you, take shit from you. You, I'm me. What anyone else may be, I bet on me. Stop playing with a boss like that. I don't react well when you talk like that. Put the money on the phone, then call right back. I don't really want to do the small talk like that. Yeah. Stop playing with a boss like that. I don't react well when you talk like that. Put the money on the phone, then call right back. I don't really want to do the small talk like that.
Yeah. Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
The people's sound is calling. The Suwanee Perry Popolo Music Festival is back and online with free jazz, noise, punk, new music, spoken word, electronic, avant-rock, sound art, and dance parties. Over 60 artists performing from Montreal, Chicago, Philadelphia, Sioux Lookout, Toronto, Mexico City, Brussels, Berlin, Tehran, Kampala, and Nairobi. Heed the call between June 3rd and 21st at suwanneeperrypopolo.org.
Le Festival International de Nuit d'Afrique, presented by TD Bank, invites you to their 35th anniversary this summer. Join us for this world music event, a 13-day celebration from July 6th to the 18th. This innovative edition takes place in venues, outdoors, and online. A fusion of past and present, rich in history and in new musical discoveries. Discover the surprises. For more information and tickets, go to festivalnuitdafrique.com.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yes, Montreal, my city. Welcome back to The Morning Detour. I'm your host, Weezy Moon Chaser. Now, you know it's Friday. I had to do a featured interview. If you don't know this person in Canada, there's a problem. He's big business. He's a former professional basketball player. He's a director for community engagement. He's a brand manager. And he's also the general manager of two respectful sport organizations, the Niagara River Lions and the Mississauga Tiger baseball team. Let me tell you something, man. He's a Ghanaian-Canadian entrepreneur. It's my pleasure to bring him to the show. I'm kind of nervous because he's big business under 40. I want to bring to the show Mr. Antwi. I call him the Super GM. How you doing, King?
I'm doing great, man. I appreciate that phenomenal intro. I'm thankful to be here and share, you know, parts of my story and my journey with everyone. And, you know, it's a blessing.
All right. So let's jump right into it, man. You came from Rexdale. When I read that, I'm like, okay, he's really from the hood. So he's official. You could really play ball. I've seen the highlights. I saw the numbers, all-star game, all of that. You even went to Arizona State. You played alongside James Harden. Everybody knows the beard. That's a great relationship right there. But you said to yourself, you know what? I don't just want to be a basketball player. You also got a degree in communications, in business. I'm like, oh, boy. Shout out to this guy. You lived the dream. And Arizona State was like the top college for party colleges.
Yeah.
So I got to get you to come on my podcast, Running Wolves, to give me all those Las Vegas, L.A. stories.
For sure.
But, Andrew, I want to ask you this. When you sit down at home and you think about, man, I own my own company. I'm involved in different cities and different countries in terms of progressing the culture, the community. I have great relationships with people like you've worked alongside Ebony and other great publications as well. When you sit down at home, how do you feel about everything? How do you feel about your life so far?
Even when you talk about it now, I kind of get kind of surreal. I'm super thankful. I feel like I'm super blessed, and I feel like along my journey, along this path, I always had my sights set. Even then, now, presently, being a visual representation for our people.
Right.
I know, like, being a Ghanaian-Canadian and being from Toronto and, you know, we're first generation. I was born in Toronto. My parents were from Ghana. And just like many of us who migrated here,
right.
It's very, very difficult to find visual representations of, you know, amazing success stories. So I wanted to kind of take the chances and lead the way and lead the charge and not be afraid if I fail or not and just kind of give the next behind me a GPS on how to be successful. Whatever your definition of success is, you know, it doesn't have to be just playing basketball. It could be on the court, could be off the court. It could be a manager. It could be you're an artist. It could be you're the best janitor you want to be. I just want to show a visual representation of success.
Well, listen, you're definitely that. Like, you're one of the best dudes under 40. It's like everybody's in Toronto. You came on Rexdale. So you grew up in Rexdale. You grew up playing basketball. You also had a rap career. I'm looking for your undisclosed mixtape that nobody's heard before. I'm still waiting for those tracks, Antwi. Let's open up here. You went to college at Arizona State. You played basketball. You earned 2 degrees in mass communication and in business. What was like being at the college? Because I've always dreamed about playing ball in Canada and going to a D1 college. What was that experience like being a Canadian, Ghanaian-Canadian, to go there and play D1 basketball? And on top of it, you played alongside, obviously, one of the greatest players of all time. When it's all said and done, Mr. James Harden. But what was that college experience like for you?
I think it was a phenomenal experience. It changed my life forever. I mean, I went to school for mass communication business. But essentially, I went to school and I learned how to build relationships and add value to others, even if you look at my story in my last year of college, my coach didn't play me much. Whatever the case would be, I mean, it was a new coach. My coach that recruited me got fired and he didn't play me much. And he told me at the beginning of the year that you have to suck it up because you can't transfer. Yeah. So either you're gonna stay here and still be a leader to the younger guys and lead by example, or you're gonna transfer to a different school and try to figure it out that way. And I already told my parents that I wanted to graduate Arizona State, so you know I stuck it up that year, and I think later on in hindsight it made me a better man, and I built more relationships with my younger players, and which helped me in business also. So the experience there was just phenomenal. Beautiful weather, beautiful people on and off campus. I got to run in a lot with the Phoenix Suns, Amari Stoudemire, Steve Nash, etc. So I got the best of both worlds, especially being from Canada, that we're very multicultural. Arizona is not the most multicultural state,
right,
but it's very, very non-violent, very laid back. It's a retirement place. But when you get on that Arizona State campus, we're turned up, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a lot of good time, and I'm thankful for that blessing.
Well, listen, man, yo, that definitely shows the fortitude you have, because you see a lot of guys where they don't get a lot of playing time. They don't have that character within them to see the forest for the trees. You're like, you know what? I'm going to get my degree same way, and I'm going to flip it and use it for great things. Speaking about great things, man, you run your own company. You created and participated in various community engagements across the country, across the world, and you're also a brand manager. How did you begin as an entrepreneur? Like, where was your first idea? Like, you know what? I'm going to start selling T-shirts, or I'm going to start creating events. Where did you begin this whole entrepreneur journey for yourself?
Well, I think it started somewhat before college, when I was maybe in middle school, when I didn't know I was a soccer player, a center midfielder for our team, Ontario, and they always would say, I didn't come from the most wealthy family. We're like maybe middle class, but I had siblings, and I was more of a go-getter as a middle child. And right, they told us, you have to raise funds if you want to go to this tournament. So to give us a box of almonds. So what I would do is, instead of selling one box of almonds for two, I would sell like two boxes of almonds for like $6. But I would go in front of the mall, and I would wait for a family of four or five and approach the kid. Because I know if I approach the kid...
You're smart! Like, you're smart! The
mother or the mother's going to have to be like, pull him away, like, no, or yes. So I realized I was pulling on the heartstrings of, like, the kids who already learned about marketing. And that, at a young age, kind of had my entrepreneurial endeavors going. And as I went to college, as I matured, I got more into fashion like I always was. And I remember I was wearing a lot of these high-end fashion European brands. And a lot of my teammates and people around the school would start wearing them because I was wearing them. So I'm like,
you're a trendsetter, Antwi. You're a trendsetter.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? I'm actually like a walking billboard for these marketing companies, for these companies that know nothing about me and probably care nothing about me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, I want to create something not just for myself, but for people that look like me or don't even look like me, that can, you know, wear it and it can be high end and they can enjoy it in different facets and different places where they go, whether it's basketball court, whether it's in meetings, whether it's where they go out with their friends. And that was the vision behind it, and tell a story with every piece of clothing. So when you walk, you're a billboard and you're actually spinning this narrative out of strength, power, noir and noir, you know what I'm saying? So black on black and stuff like that.
No, let's talk about noir and noir. Noir and noir is a specialized brand company that you have. The focus that I saw about noir and noir is that you're trying to integrate sports, entertainment, education into one unique, memorable experience. So right, speak to us a little bit about noir and noir. First of all, Montreal, my shit, I gotta let y'all know, I'm gonna throw the link up there. This dude is fly. Antwi knows what he's doing. I saw some of the hoodies, some of the t-shirts. I'm like, yo, I need that in my photo shoots, Antwi. Please send me the link. I need it. But speak to us about your brand, Noir & Noir.
Well, Noir & Noir began as Ball Noir, which meant what I created as being blackballed. Because after my first year of school, I felt like I was being blackballed from like different opportunities. And I felt like using that energy and speaking that out to the universe was going to continue to happen, even though I was flipping it to more of a positive thing.
Right.
I felt like Noir and Noir was birthed kind of like how Rock Aware went from like Rock Aware to Rock Nation.
Okay.
So it's more of like the Rock Nation, where it's more broad. And it's not, you wouldn't even know I played basketball if you wore my clothes. Like, it had nothing to do with basketball. So I felt like that branding part of it and understanding, like, I wanted to give my brand legs to grow. I don't want to be stagnant and stuck in the same type of basketball arena.
Exactly.
And I felt like as I grew as a person, the brand grows. And I feel like, you know, it just tells a story. Now, as you see, the pair that I have now is a lot more simple, a lot more laid back. It's kind of like a black canvas for you to paint your picture on it, versus being more like decorative and telling the kings, the queens, et cetera. Now it's kind of like, you know what we are already. If you
exactly. Tell them that, Sweet. Tell them what it is.
100%. You know what you are when you put that clothes on. You know you a king. You know you a queen.
Right.
You know you come from royalty. So whatever you want to dress on top of that is up to you. So that's kind of like the vision of it. And I'm still growing it every single day.
Listen, man, simple is always best. I love it. Noir et noir. Speak to me about culture. How important is promoting positive Black culture images to you? Because you do a lot of charity work in different cities, in different countries. So it tells me that this is somebody that's actively invested into promoting Black culture in a positive light. How important is that aspect to you?
I feel it's extremely important. I was blessed to grow up in a great household with a mother and a father where, you know, they taught me a lot about myself from my Ghanaian roots, my heritage, and they taught me to be proud and, you know, to be not just proud, but be accepting of all cultures. Mm-hmm. You know, so for me, teaching Black culture and having pride in or being not, I don't want to say just having pride, but like accepting of everyone else, it just amplifies everything we do. Yeah. So I'm not going there saying this is the only culture that's, you know, that's the most powerful. I'm just saying, you know what, this is what we do. Here is how the narrative used to look like, but here how it looks like now. And if you want to learn more about it, you do your own research. But I'm just giving you like the tools that are in the toolbox of mine.
Exactly.
So you can kind of take it from me and put it in your toolbox. That's kind of the reference that I try to use. So it's extremely important that I try to do my best to branch out to different neighborhoods, different areas, and spread the word. You know, kind of how like the ancient griots would do in West Africa.
Okay. You got to transfer the story properly with the griots. Yeah. I think we are in good hands in terms of Black culture in Canada if we have people like you at the forefront, making sure we're well represented. I like the way you go about your business. So if that wasn't enough, you're doing brand managing. You know, you have your own company, you're setting up charities, and you're doing events in different cities. On top of it, you're a general manager of two different organizations. It's not even the same sport. Where do you find the time? So talk to me, how do you get into become general manager of the Niagara River Lions and also the Mississauga Tigers baseball team? How did that kind of come about for you?
Yeah, well, for the Niagara River Lions, Victor Rizzo is actually the general manager. I'm the assistant general manager and head of operations for that organization. And that came about by, you know, my expertise in like basketball side, but off the court stuff. I created a program called The Lab, which means life after basketball, that I implemented to our players. So when we come, I set them up with, you know, financial literacy. I set them up with entrepreneurship classes. I set them up with different things that what they want to do, whether it's real estate. I have a big database of network that I lead them to the water. So whenever they're ready to drink it, they can. So it makes their transition from basketball to the real world or to the corporate world a little bit easier. So they're not afraid of it afterwards.
Look at this guy. Andrew, you're giving out too much keys. Andrew, you're giving out, you're helping too much people. Andrew, they're going to shut you down. But that's beautiful, man. Cause a lot of people don't do that. A lot of guys get into professional sports and they just leave it at that, but they don't have no business sense. They don't know how to invest the money. They don't know how to operate in the real world with all of this money. And it's beautiful that you set up this whole infrastructure for them. That's such a beautiful thing. Baseball. I know you grew up with a background in baseball. A lot of people don't know you have a background in baseball. So you nice. You nice with the baseball thing. Yes, sir.
So like, I grew up with a background of baseball, soccer, and basketball. My father was a cricket player. So when I was growing up, he put the baseball in my hand and I was really, really good. I played the hot corner. I played third base. And, you know, financially, we couldn't really do it. So I had to move to a sport that I can dominate, which was basketball. But a mentor of mine when I was in high school, Coach Sean Travers, is actually a big baseball coach in Toronto. We kept in touch. And he has a big organization, which has the best players from Canada from age 16 to 18. Majority of these guys are going to be pros. So he brought me on board to be the general manager, give them my knowledge on what I could do, not just on the field, but off the field. And we already created a scholarship for them players that look like us called the Cito Gaston Scholarship. And that's for like any Afro-Canadians or Black Canadians that can't afford to like play the game financially. We give them scholarships so they can play on our team, get the highest training, go on trips with our team, and, you know, essentially change your life and break generational curses. So that's what we do on the baseball side.
You're changing everybody's life. You have me feeling like I need to go into baseball or basketball so I can reap some of these resources. That's where you're doing big things.
Thank you, man.
I'm so happy we connected here, man. The drama. Andrew, I want to ask you this. You've been around so many professional athletes and, you know, semi-professional athletes. What do you think is one of the major things holding us back from getting international recognition in terms of Canadian athletes?
That's an easy question. It's the branding. We have a lot of major players. Let's say in the NBA, we have Murray, we have a Wiggins, we have, you know, just a lot of great players and they're doing phenomenal things. But I feel like the branding of these players, not their teams or their personal teams, not a shot at them. The branding of these players just as a whole in Canada isn't at the forefront of like superstar status as if you were in America.
Right.
We do have to do a better job of, you know, getting that best visual representation of our players, getting their jerseys of whatever city there is on the kids' backs in the city as well, and in the metropolitan areas, in the neighborhoods, and then figured out a better way to kind of horizontally integrate in the corporate space as well with our athletes.
Yes.
So now they're faced on billboards next to an Apple. They're faced on billboard next to an Intel. They're faced on billboard next to a Loblaws, et cetera. Just finding different ways to creatively implement and integrate in all aspects, and I think we'll grow. It's fairly new to a lot of people, as we can see. It's still new to us, but I think not taking the right chances and not kind of tapping into these resources now, it could be keep walking in the dead end. So I feel like the branding aspect and, you know, reaching out on that higher level with integrating corporate, integrating neighborhoods, integrating community aspect, that's kind of not what we're lacking, but we're not what we're doing the best job of yet. And I think we can improve in those areas.
Well, listen, with people like you, I think we're definitely going to go in the right direction. You have all the resources, you have the energy, you have the charisma. So things are looking up for us as Canadian athletes. I read somewhere here, and I want to talk about it here as we back in this interview here, talk about what kind of advice you can impart on people that's trying to become entrepreneurs, people that's trying to get more involved in their community. And one of the things I saw that you said that action cures fear. So I want you to speak on that a little bit, because that is true. A lot of people are scared to put themselves on the limb. Because when you're an entrepreneur, you know what I mean? That pay stub every fortnight, you're creating that. The sick days is on you. No one is checking up on you. It's all on you. And a lot of people fear that kind of dichotomy because they're so used to the 40-40 structure. We work 40 hours for 40 years. And a lot of people are afraid to, they have great ideas, but they're afraid to take it there and take a chance on themselves. So what kind of advice would you impart on someone that has a great idea, that wants to become more involved in the community, but they're scared? They're like, how do I become an auntie? How do I become an entrepreneur?
Well, that's a great question. I think the best answer for that is, on my advice I'll give them, obviously action cures fear. And, you know, movement is medicine, you know, and don't be afraid of the slow grind. Don't expect instant gratification and don't look at someone's end result of their process and think that needs to be you right where you're at, where you stand. Like, we often people look at, like, even a story as myself or anyone else that they may view as successful, like, wow, he got there and I want to get there, but you got to put that 10,000 hours of mastery to get there. You can't be afraid of that slow grind. You can't be afraid of the losses that come with it, because the losses become losses. So, like, go in there open-minded, and then act on it. Have a plan and